Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
The Steve Austin Show is brought to you free today by our friends at BetOnline. Get in the mix at betonline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, here we are, calling in the ring. You know, I'm talking to Amy Dumas, Lita. She's going into the Hall of Fame here in just a couple of days. And this is a question, Amy, that I get asked all the time. As long as you and I have known each other, I've always pretty much called you Lita.
Yeah.
So what do you prefer?
Well, you're one of the few people, I've even have the McMahons trained to call me Amy.
Yeah.
You know, they love to brand, like, they're like, I made you, so this is what, I'm going to call you this.
Right.
But it didn't, that name never kind of stuck with me, and it took me a minute to respond to it. So I've kind of switched everybody back over to Amy at this point.
So back in Amy, so I'm going to call you Amy. But I'm talking to Lita. She's going into the Hall of Fame. Every time I roll in here and I say hi to Kevin Dunn, it's stone cold. Because that's who I am to Kevin Dunn. And I love Kevin Dunn, but that's who I am. So we're here at the Hall of Fame. It's WrestleMania 30. Can you believe, as long as you've been a wrestling fan, and you're 10 years younger than me, you're a spring chicken still, but this has been going on for 30 years. And how many WrestleManias were you a part of yourself?
Jeez, I don't know. I know 17 was my first one. I was on the plane over here today with Gerald Briscoe, who's been to all 30. This is his 30th WrestleMania.
You flew over today with Briscoe?
Briscoe, yeah.
Did y'all shoot the breeze?
Yeah.
And this is my PG show, okay? did y'all hang out? And
yeah, I saw him on the flight. It was my first taste, you know, as I'm being like forced back into my Lita life. And I was like, Mr. Briscoe. He said, it's my 30th WrestleMania.
Have you always gotten along with him?
Oh, sure, sure.
Those guys were absolutely wonderful. And, you know, I don't know. I had so much fun with them back in the day when I got to toss the Stooges around.
Sure.
So you come back into the mix, and now that you've gotten away with it, I mean, you're going to the Hall of Fame. What was your feeling when all of a sudden you get the phone call? Who called you, and how did you feel once you heard the news?
Okay, Steph called me. But Steph called me to see if I would be interested in maybe doing something revolving around the weekend of WrestleMania 30. It was all right. Very vague and ambiguous, which is funny because, you know, like, I just get out of this world. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is how things work. You know exactly why you're calling me. You know exactly what information you need to get. But we need to have this conversation so that this can happen. And I'm like, oh, yeah. But in my head, I'm like, you're insulting me by not telling me, but I would be insulting you if I was like, come on, you know the deal. What are you asking me?
Yeah.
But no, so she inferred, and I thought it was going to maybe be having a match or something that I was like,
you're kind of cringing.
You know, right, yeah. Like, you see the 203 numbers pop up and are like, oh no, what do they want? What you know, I'm over here being chill in my own world. What do you know? And then Mark Carano called and told me, and I was like, wow, okay, cool. Yeah, I'm into that. I was like, I was already, my defenses were up. I was like, ready to be like,
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, that's cool. Let's do that. It'll be fun.
So, but you were excited about being in, obviously.
Yeah, I was at my place in Nicaragua, and I was sitting there by myself reading a book, and, you know, got the call, and I was stoked, but I was like, I feel like I should tell somebody about this, you know, and I go and I call my mom and I tell her because, you know, it's like I was happy, but I was like, OK, I think this is a big deal. I don't know. And so I call her and she was like, well, that's great, hon. Well, I watered the plants and I checked your mail and everything's fine over at the house. And I was like, all right, great.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be on my hammock over here just reading a book. And
hey, talk about you said you kind of, you're back in your Amy world,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of what I do because I've been away way longer than you.
Yeah.
But people don't really understand. All of a sudden you get that phone call and it's kind of like, okay, don't know where the crap or why on my watch. What's going on here? You know, and, you know, I got other things going on and you have another life now.
Right.
So it's a weird because you've been able to separate yourself from the business.
Sure.
You've been out long enough and you're doing other things.
Right, but there's that weird, like, you know, I'm in a great relationship with everybody here.
Yes.
And there should be no reason for me to be like, what do they want?
Yeah.
But it's like this cringe, like, and I feel a set, like, it's an indentured servitude, you
right.
know, like, I mean, of course I can either not answer the phone. I can say, no, I have no interest. You know, like, so you're perfectly capable of doing whatever. They're not, but it's just like weird, what's happening? What, like, your defenses automatically go up.
Right.
And then, fortunately, and this whole time, I've been pleasantly surprised and I've had nothing but an awesome experience. And even when I've come back to do, like, the 15th anniversary shows or the Raw 1000s, I still have a little bit of, like, oh, no, like, why did I agree to do this? I'm not sure I want to be here. But then once I'm there, I'm like, it's great. It's fun. And it's great and fun because I'm just going to come here for this day and I'm going to see everybody and I'm going to have a great time. And like, I like the little cameos,
yeah,
but I enjoy my own life.
Yeah.
My Amy world. You
but
know?
You retired in 2006.
Yeah.
And I kind of rode off into the sunset in, I don't know, 03, whatever it was. It took me a long time mm-hmm. to get the business out of my system. I wasn't ready to ride off in the sunset. I really needed to. And I did. And it took me 3 years to get the business out of my system. I drank a lot of damn liquor. You know, mm-hmm. I drank a lot of whiskey and vodka. And then I finally got over it. And now, you know, when I think about the business, I have so many fond memories. And it's fun for me to come back. And today, as we speak, is Thursday. We still have the whole weekend to go. And I get a chance to see all the guys and gals and talk to everybody and experience the moment. And to be able to live vicariously through the new regime
mm-hmm.
and watch them have fun. But when you left the business, why did you leave? I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about your neck injury, but what made you say, hey, Amy, it's time to get out of Dodge?
Well, so for me, you know, and I understand other people, you know, not quite ready to leave, but it just being time. Mine was the flip side. I felt I've done everything I can as a woman in this business, and I didn't get into it for a paycheck, but it's become a paycheck. I hear my music, right. And I'm like, oh, that means it's time to go out. I'm not like, wow, let's do work. Right. Let's see where I can take this tonight. I want to push the envelope. It had become fairly easy to be good at my job. And while that's comforting in some ways, you know, I kind of knew the deal. And it's so demanding of your time and of everything about you that it's not like you can do that and do whatever else.
Right.
I'd missed a bunch of my friends' weddings and babies being born and just life. And I just thought, I was like, you know, there's so many chapters in life, and this is an awesome chapter, and I love it, but I don't need to beat it into the ground. And I'd rather fall on my face on the next chapter, but have time, than collect a paycheck or beat it into the ground, or collect a paycheck and not appreciate it for the awesome time that it was. And I'm like, let me get out, like, not, you know, like, let me get out right before that I hate everything and hate
right.
everyone and I'm resentful towards things that I shouldn't be.
Yeah. I made a couple of bad decisions in my career, and you know, I was when I got caught up in the trenches, I was running pretty hot and heavy, and I was having such a blast. But when I walked away from the company on the Brock Lesnar deal, mm-hmm. That was a big regret of mine. Do you have anything any decisions that you made that you really regretted, or just some of the things you didn't accomplish that you may have wanted to?
Man, Jericho gave me the best advice that I've never followed.
Jericho.
Yes, Chris Jericho said, don't unless you're ready to walk out of the building, don't go and air your grievances, because they're going to still get you to do what they want you to do, and you're going to have heat.
Yeah.
So either draw a line in the sand and right. say, this is what needs to happen or I'm going to leave, or shut your mouth and do your job and you know, skew it to how you want to, try to make it your version of what they want. But I wouldn't do that. I would go tell them I thought their idea sucked. They'd be mad at me. I'd go do it. And then I'd be mad that I did it. And I wish that I could have... I think all things considered, I got pretty far because I was constantly in trouble with the office.
Why?
Because I would be a brat. I would be a brat about how I would go about saying things. I'd be like, I don't agree with this. I think it's wrong. As opposed to, like, I mean, Trish and I are really good friends, but she's about the antithesis of knowing how to, I mean, I'd laugh and I'd be like, God, I wish I could do that. I just can't. I lack whatever that is, diplomacy.
Right.
Like, you know, and it's just.
Were you always like it?
Yes. I'm terrible.
A little rebellious.
Yeah, and I mean, even like if I'm trying to get, you know, a name changed on the electric bill or something, if it's not going my way, I just get bratty. I'm not like, you're a terrible human and I think you should die, but I'm just like, I'll be like, all right, I got to go. And I'll just hang up the phone because I'm like, now I'm going to start to be a jerk and I don't want to be. So we're just going to end this. But I watch people, they're like, well, I understand that. And can we maybe just make an exception? I'm like, whoa, how are you doing that? I just can't do it. So that being said, I did some things that I just wish I would have chilled out about.
And that's how it rolls here on the Steve Austin Show podcast. I'm sitting here with Amy with her. What kind of dog is that? A poodle?
No, she's a terrier mutt.
A terrier. And so the people are knocking on the door for the turndown service. And this is one of the things, Amy, you know, the turndown service. I can turn down my own sheets. I'm going to pull the damn things back, and I'm going to crawl in there a little bit, and I'm going to go to sleep. And so now Mackenzie's all stirred up because she went to full kill mode. She was going to protect us from the person that was trying to get in here and turn down my sheets. I'm sorry I interrupted your answer.
Okay, so I just think that I wish that I could have. I mean, now I have got, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and it just, and it's, whatever it was, it wasn't right. as big of a deal as I thought it was at the time. And so much stress and being so mad that something wasn't going the way that I wanted it to, I wish that I could have just chilled out and either approached it a different way or gone, okay, this is how you're going to do it. You don't think it's great, but just go out there and have fun with it instead of going out there with a sour face because I don't agree with it and I'm reluctantly doing my job and it shows, to me at least. And I wish I would have been more mature to be able to do that.
Well, here's a question I got for you. I mean, because, you know, here in the WWE, and it's called Divas, but I looked at you as, I mean, you're a beautiful woman, but I looked at you as a pro wrestler. How did you look at yourself?
I'd never identified with a diva, right. The term diva. I would even refer to the other girl. I'd be like, well, the divas. And I'm like, I'm not talking about myself.
And you're boys.
It wasn't even a derogatory term. It was just my perception of my role.
Right.
I would approach things and it would, my set of standards would not apply to, well, no, but we're just having the girls. I'm like, yeah, okay, we'll just have the girls do whatever you want.
Right, right.
Here's what I have to say about this.
So as you came up, now I know you were watching WCW, you saw Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
That's what intrigued you about the business and you were ready to get in. But that being said, and we're going to get into you going to Mexico, but just as far as an influence, and maybe Ray was an influence, I know your time down in Mexico, but as far as females in the business, were there any women that were instrumental in, I know so many women paved the way, but did you draw any inspiration or any influence from any of the women before you?
The one woman that I'd say, I loved Luna Vachon.
Yes.
And then Manami Toyota.
Yeah.
Was, I mean, the main woman, you know, big in Japan, but just of somebody, once I'm into something, whether it's, you know, classic cars or my exercise or wrestling or whatever it is, I'm just tunnel vision. So, you know, while Manami Toyo did not have success in the mainstream in the USA, I was digging tapes of anything I could find once I decided that I was interested in professional wrestling. She's just an awesome badass that, as you know, one of those, if you look her up, you'll be like, holy crap. And it's going from so long ago. I mean, she was doing moves that, you know, I was the first woman in the United States to do some of the moves that you saw as a woman do. Right. But in Mexico and Japan, they were doing before. And I would always feel bad taking the credit because, you know, radio DJs would be like, wow, you know, you're doing these things that no one's ever done. I'm like, yeah, well, hey, thanks.
Yeah.
But they've been doing them in Japan and Mexico long before I was. And I saw that. And it's not like I didn't invent these things.
But I was watching. I was doing some reading about you, and like I was talking to you downstairs when I first saw you and I was excited to see you. I didn't get a chance to do all my research, but you went to school in Lassiter. Is that in Georgia?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Glacier and Cody Rhodes were both went to Lassiter.
But you're from Florida?
No, I was from Florida, and then by the time I was in high school, I was in Marietta.
Then you're in the Atlanta area. Mm-hmm. But then why all of a sudden you see Rey Mysterio, you get the wrestling bug, and you go to Mexico to learn?
Right. I got to go to the source.
But, you know, what about the power plant? What about American wrestling? I mean, those were certainly available. You decided to haul us to go to Mexico.
Yeah.
Big step. What'd your parents say?
It was just, they know at that point I do what I'm going to do.
You were headstrong from the get-go.
They're going to give me a few words of wisdom. Right. Hey, are you sure?
But you were always independent?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I had to find out first because, you know, I knew enough to know everything is a gimmick. You never know what's real, what's not. So I was like, are the Mexican wrestlers really from Mexico?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
because I don't want to get all the way down there and then find out there's some surfer dudes from California or some gymnasts.
Yeah.
So I did find out that they were from Mexico before I went down to Mexico and headed down there to try to figure out.
Okay, so you go down there and you don't speak the language, right?
Well, I had 3 years of high school Spanish. So no, I do not speak the language, but it was one of the only subjects in school that I found useful. A lot of the subjects, I was like, I'm not going to use this. I can balance my checkbook. I don't need to know about this, you know, beyond this. But Spanish, it was like, oh, I can communicate with other people.
Right.
I can, it's like pig Latin. I can tell, you know, talk to my friend.
We're
and,
not
you
talking
know.
Pig Latin so, here.
You were talking, it's okay. Like carny. Yeah. You know, like there's useful, there's
places
for it.
Did you ever pick up the carny language? I would say the odd word here and there, mm-hmm. but I never did just start having full-blown conversations in carny. Were you that person?
No, and I wasn't with the handshake, the light hand. No, it's like you know of their existence, and occasionally speak as a mockery of the existence, but not. But you're right. You would throw a word in there, like the gizmic or something.
Yeah. So then when you go down there, so all of a sudden, what'd you do? You looked who up to go learn.
I just tried to find out where the shows were taking place. I didn't
even
know.
Was this AAA, MLL?
It was CMLL, Consejo Mundial de Lucha Libre, which was the biggest in Mexico City. Since WWE will work their arena. So I just, I didn't, which I did not know at the time. You know, I didn't know where the big arena was. I just found out where that was and literally just started hanging around until they believed me. I mean, first they just thought I was
here's an American chick. She's down here in Mexico. She wants to get into business.
Right. And they said, oh, well, you know, you should be a beer model. And I'm like, well, I'll trade you. Do you need a beer model? I'll trade you, but I want to train to wrestle. And so they're kind of like, no, you don't want to train to wrestle. How about you do this? And you're gonna, I was like, do you need that? I'll trade you, you know, what I want to do is learn to wrestle.
So how long did it take them to figure out that you're pretty damn stubborn and independent and have your mindset on what you want to do and said, okay, we'll teach you.
It was for 6 weeks. I was down there the first time.
Yeah.
And I just, there are 4 matches a week. So I found a judo club that I would go to. So 3 nights a week, I'd do judo and 4 nights a week, I'd go to the matches. And I would just get there, boom, like first thing, I'd sit through the whole match, I'd wait till everybody left, and then I'd leave. And so they're kind of like, what's her deal? Like, she's not sleeping with anybody. She's like, she's not the beer model. Like, she just comes to the matches and says she wants to be a wrestler. Like, what is her deal? I'm like, I told you what my deal is. I want to be a wrestler. Like, and this is all I know to do is to sit here at the matches, you know? And so finally, after 6 weeks, I said, well, I'm going home. And my ticket for the first ticket was 6 weeks. I said, I'm going to go home, but I'm going to try to come back. I want to be a wrestler. You know, I said, well, you know, we believe you. So if you come back, we'll set you up. You can train at the school here at the CMLL school.
Well, what happened?
So I went home, saved up money, and I went back.
How long was it?
I was there for about another month.
Okay, so when you get over and you start training, you'd never trained anything.
Right.
So you've never really been in a ring.
No, I've never been in a ring.
You've taken some judo.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So how was the instruction? Because, as long as you've been in the business now, it's all about bumping. It's, mm-hmm. You're going to do some forward rolls, and it's basically about just, you know.
Safely bumping.
What was it over there? Because, you know, when I watch, sometimes I go to Mexico to film a reality television show, and I get a chance to watch a lot of Lucha Libre stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm about to ask you about the psychology, because I still don't understand it.
Right.
But they're very technically proficient.
Mm-hmm.
The Mexican performers are very, very good in the ring. And so what are they preaching or teaching as far as the basics go when you start?
Well, fortunately for me, which is like, it's just like the whole thing, it just worked out so fortuitously. Yes, that's what I was drawn to. But what was going to serve me better, it was an American style of wrestling. I mean,
yes.
So I stayed at the hotel where the foreigners were staying, which are the Canadians and Americans and Puerto Ricans. So that's who trained me.
Okay.
So I was trained American style in Mexico.
Gotcha.
So we were working left. We were, you know, doing flat bumps. We were not rolling.
Working,
you know?
Left. Explain to people what you mean by working left. I know.
So in Mexico, they work everything off of the right arm, the right side, right arm drags, right headlock, and everywhere else they work left.
Right.
So, you know, focusing on the left side of the body. So I was taught that way.
Why is that? I've been in the business longer than you, but why is that? I don't know. But it's different. And all of a sudden you get someone who works right trying to go in there and work with someone who works left, and it's a cluster.
Yeah.
So anyway, you're over there, and how long were you in Mexico for?
So that was another month. And basically I just learned how to bump.
Now, how did you like bumping? Because some people, and obviously I saw your whole career, you got a problem with it. When you first started hitting that mat, some people are allergic to that mat.
Mm-hmm.
And very quickly, they decide that pro wrestling is not for them.
Oh, I mean, it was a shock. I was like, wow, all right.
Hall of Famer here talking about shock.
It was, but I knew that I was like, all right, here we go. I mean, it wasn't like a adrenaline junkie, like, oh, hit me harder, come on, I want it, you know. But I was like, all right, they're making sure I feel it to see if I go home. Finally got to step my foot in the door at the school to go home. Yes, this hurts. Yes, I'd prefer if it didn't hurt so much, but I want to be a wrestler, and this is what I'm down here for. I took pictures of my bruises because I was proud of them.
Yeah.
But you know, it was kind of like it's just what had to happen to get to the next step.
And so did you end up working down there for a long time?
No, I was just, that next month I was down there. So it was just a crash course, just bumping. Then all those guys were going, hey, you know, there's places a lot closer to your house that you can work, and started giving me contact numbers of places I was working with NWA and some, on the indies from there once I went back.
So you're going back to the indies, but then you hook up with Dory Funk.
Yes.
Go to the Funkin' Dojo. Now, Dory is extremely technical. He's one of my favorites of all time. Definitely an old school guy. So you go from that environment, all of a sudden you go to Dory's school. How long were you there? And what did you learn from Dory, who, you know, is one of the greatest of all time, in my opinion?
Yeah, it was awesome. Because so before we had developmental territories, like, you know, the FCW or the NXT, Dory ran these guys through the ringer. And up at Titan Towers. So we'd have a group of people that weren't on TV yet. Kurt went through Dory. Test went through Dory. So they'd have a group, and he would just run them through and kind of let them know what they wanted from TV, bring them up for dark matches, and then just kind of filter them back and forth. And that was the system back then. They changed their system all the time. That wasn't their system any longer. At that time, I was already working at ECW. But we weren't making much money. And so I paid to go to Dory Funk's camp with my own money, which of course Paulie didn't like very much, because he's like, why are you going to pay to go train when you're already here on TV? I was like, because I'm not keeping my lights on with what you're giving me.
Right.
And I'm soaking it in for the experience that it is, which is awesome, but he knows what they want, where I want to be.
Right.
And so I went there, and it was just he had a week class set up exactly how they had it up at WWE. And it was about 8-hour days, like about 4 hours in the morning, a break, and then four more hours. And then at the end of the week, you had a show, you know, just for local kids, you know. And it was how much you could learn in 1 week there, of just picking up little aha things here and there from being on the indies.
So what did you pick up from Dory? I mean, was it the subtleties? I mean, was it more chain wrestling? Was it a different level of psychology?
Yeah, I think it was a lot more of a big picture. And yes, subtleties. He's somebody that he'll go off on tangents and you're like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. What is he even talking about? And then you're like, oh, he knows exactly what he's talking about. And I get what you're saying. He just took 30 minutes to say it, but I get it, you know.
Did you, as you were coming up and starting to learn, sometimes it was, I found that some guys would try to tell me things. And it's sometimes when I go back and come to an environment like this and I'll start talking to guys and I'll realize as I'm talking to them and I'll see the look in their eyes that they're not ready for what I'm telling them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can only absorb to the level of what you're ready to absorb. And one level goes on top of the other, and it's 101. And it might be a long time before you're ready for 201 and then 301.
Absolutely.
And it's a lot of on-the-job training. And sometimes you're going down the road and all of a sudden the light goes off. It's like, oh, geez,
mm-hmm.
This is what they were talking about. This is what Dory meant when he went off on a 30-minute tangent.
No, I love that. And I remember, and I've had people come up to me all the time, you know, what do I need to do for this? What advice can you give me? And I'll be honest, and I'll profile them. I'm like, this might seem so simple to you, but this is all I'm going to give you right now because it's all you're ready for.
Right.
And if we meet back up again, or you take that information and go somewhere with it, like, we can have another conversation at another point, but you're not ready for option C because you just need to get here first. And that's huge. I mean, to be able to know what you're ready for and digest it as you can.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. And Geico would just like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your Savage Dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's Geico's turn to share, too, with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. And because Geico's committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. Hey, check it out. I just received some new sunglasses from Shady Rays for the summer. They were nice enough to send me a few pair of their X Series, and I gotta say, they fit great and look cool. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company, so not some big corporation that overcharges for shades. And everyone knows sunglasses are way overpriced. Shady Rays is out to do it differently, with premium polarized shades built for the outdoors and backed for life. The craziest thing about Shady Rays is their warranty. This is one of the best warranties in all of eyewear. Shady Rays will send replacements if shades are lost or broken for any reason. It don't matter what happens. Dropped in the ocean, lake, anything, they'll replace them. Try that with your high-priced shades and see if they'll help you. Even with that strong of a warranty, they still manage to make quality that I can tell you holding in my hand seems just as good as any expensive pair that I have ever worn. Polarized lenses that look perfectly clear, and most Shady Rays are $48. Shady Rays also provide 10 meals to fight hunger in America with every order placed and have provided over 10 million meals to date. They stand behind their product and told our team that if anyone has a problem, they throw profit out the window and do what it takes to get it right. Free returns and exchanges. You either love the shades or Shady Rays will pay to ship them back. That's it. Exclusively for the Steve Austin Show listeners, they gave us the best deal they have to offer. This is a Black Friday level deal. Use code STEVE for 50% off two or more pairs at ShadyRays.com. Buy one, get one free. You can get two pairs of shades for $48. Redeem only at ShadyRays.com, where you can find all their newest and best shades.
The Steve Austin Show.
The Steve Austin Show.
You know, this is, I'm talking to Amy Dumas, Lita. You had a, I don't know how to explain your style. I mean, you were no fear whatsoever and a very solid worker, but you did a lot of stuff in that one swing around thing. Remember, well, after you hurt your neck, we'll get to the neck injury, but that used to scare the hell out of me, especially after you hurt your neck. I guess the question I'm trying to ask is, how did you come up with your style as far as what you did in the ring? And when I say stone cold, and a lot of people say, okay, he's a beer-swilling redneck, blah, 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 blah. That was the definition of that character. And in your heart or in your mind, who was Lita, the person inside that 20 by 20 square?
Right. I feel like my style in the ring was almost a physical manifestation of what my brain was of going down to Mexico. You can't know unless you do it. You got to just go for it. You can't overthink it. And you're never going to know unless you try.
Right.
You know, and that was definitely my thing. And it was funny. I watched later on, there was a few wrestlers that were so obviously influenced by me.
Right.
That were even doing the stuff I do wrong. They were even mimicking that. And I'm like, oh my God, they have their head down. They're doing that. And yeah. I know why, but hey, if I watched my stuff back, it makes me uncomfortable, and then it's going to make me doubt what I do. I just do it. So if I try something new and I need to see how it looks, that's one thing. But as a whole, I don't like to study it, because then I'm going to be self-conscious and I'm going to feel like I look stupid, because I'm going to feel stupid, you know, looking myself out there. But I watched some wrestlers. I'm like, oh, she's watched several Lita tapes, because right. of even the little nuances.
Okay, Monday Night Raw, the music hits, or any house show USA. Mm-hmm. The music hit, it's your music. You go to the ring. What are you feeling when your music hits? And then once you get on those turnbuckles and start doing your thing, what's going through your mind?
I just remember feeling so at home. And so, like, I'm pretty shy and pretty introverted and don't really feed off of people. Like, I need to recharge by myself.
Right.
Like, that's where I'm comfortable. But I'm just out there and I'm so uninhibited. Like, I love Halloween because I say you're not responsible when you have a mask on.
Right.
That's like where I am out there. I'm like, I'm not responsible. I'm being Lita, and I'm doing this thing. So it's not real life. I can go do whatever I want.
You were traveling back in the day, probably with Matt and Jeff a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you guys would ride down the road, I mean, because you didn't make a whole lot of trips with the gals,
right?
So, but were y'all in the car talking wrestling? I mean, that's what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going down the road and talking about the matches, and that's, I mean, that's where half the battle is won right there. Just going back and reliving everything and talking about, okay, well, what if I'd have done this? Or, you know, when I did this, I kind of lost them. The crowd dropped off.
Mm-hmm.
Was that what you guys were doing going down the road, talking about the business and the match and, you know, learning?
Oh, sure. And, you know, and gearing up. Always those house shows were like you were anticipating, or if you'd gotten word about what you were going to do on Monday, how to try to make that better. How could you make the most, especially when you weren't in the main event? You only knew you had a 5-minute segment and you're just going to go out there and do this. How can you make that the best 5-minute segment so that you get an 8-minute segment the next week and stuff, you know? So, analyzing. I liked spitballing all day long. Sitting there and watching myself would make me uncomfortable, because I like to just soak it in my brain and then go for it. And I know too, like, people say, oh, you know, you're really sloppy and reckless, and I'm like, well, how many people have I hurt? I haven't, you know, like, it was loose,
yeah.
like my style being loose,
yeah.
But I knew exactly where I was hitting people,
right.
and doing things, so
And I think that's part of everybody's style. I mean, I'm certainly not a technical wizard. And then, you know, if I got dropped on my head, I turned into more of a brawler. But some guys who were so crisp, it's great to look at, and it's very interesting. And it's, for a while, it's pretty. But then the slop has to come at some point with the fatigue. And so I always hated when someone didn't look, you know, that far in a match where they should have been in that part of the match by just going, oh, textbook, this is how you do it. And that didn't work for me.
That's something, actually, that I always prided myself on. And then, no, like, sure, I'll do these moves, but I'm not crisp. But I'm where I need to be. Right. I see that you're not where you need to be, so I'm going to compensate for where you are, right. And I'm going to be over here. And, you know, like, and that's one of those things, like, so unsung. And it's so invaluable skill to have, and it's so unsung because the crowd or even the other wrestler doesn't know how much you're overcompensating and working yourself in there.
To try to compensate for the fact that they're not in position.
Right.
Well, you did a lot of interesting moves, and I guess Lucha Libre inspired.
Sure.
So then were all of the gals that you worked with comfortable with working with you? Or are they scared because they couldn't pull off some of the stuff and be able to give you the base that you needed? Because what was that one move? Is that a Hurricane Rana?
Yeah, sure.
And some of the swings like that, were they worried about working with you just from not being able to take care of you or be in the position they needed to be? Because it wasn't an every night occurrence that they were working with someone who could do what you did.
Sure. I mean, and that's why a lot of those moves, not only did I just perform on the guys, a lot of them, like even the moonsault as the finisher, I'm like, you just lay here, I'll do the rest. You know, I can move, I can position in a different way, even if you're laying in a different spot. Same thing, you know, of course, I would just make sure that they knew how to do it. But I'd say, all I need you to do is just do this and we're good, you know.
Right.
But and so a lot of that was, again, like overcompensating just to make sure, because, yeah, it's a two-way street. But I don't want them to look dumb, and I don't want to look dumb, because the whole thing looks dumb if one of us does.
From a performance standpoint, when you were behind the curtains, you was about to go out, were you nervous? Was there a fear of failure? Or was that because you're a little bit of a shy person? Was that your time to perform and let it all hang out?
No, like, so, you know, I see some people backstage and they're like jumping up and down and amping themselves up. I'm the opposite. Like, I need to like zen out, you know. Right. I'm just like, I'm quiet. It would look like I'm almost bored or sleepy before I go out there, because I'm just like, all right, it's cool, I got this. And then when I go out, it's balls out, you know, it's anything goes.
Okay, the adrenaline that happens during a match. Mm-hmm. I've always talked to people about it. I mean, there's nothing like it in the world. Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to come down after a match?
See, I don't know, because we always had those long drives. So by the time, you know, at some point, you know, it was good that you had that, because you could never, you know, a lot of times if you say, I'm just going to get up and drive in the morning, even though I prefer to drive at night, because it's, you know, this, that, or it's a long drive, or the hotel is a better deal at this, you know, whatever. You'd shoot yourself in the foot, because you go back to the hotel and you didn't have a drive, but you're wide awake because your adrenaline's still going for a few hours.
You were a four-time women's champ?
Yeah.
What was the proudest moment of your career? Was it the first time? Was it anything in particular? A hell of a match that you had? Was it, you know, a feud with Trish Stratus? I mean, what was your defining moment that you felt personally affected you the most, or you were most proud of?
I'm most proud of the last time I won the title. It was the main event in Raw, on Raw in Charlotte, and it was just Trish and I. You know, I'd been in the main event several times, but it'd be with people, you know, or even Steph and I were in the main event, but like Rocky was our referee, Hunter ran down, and like we had props, you know, like we had.
Yeah, that's a pain in the ass to work around so many times when you're trying to time this out in your head. Have your match, go ahead.
So that it was just Trish and I. Main event, two girls, never been done, no props, you know, just us. And we had two segments. And so just from not only, sure, I won the title, but it's to have two women and to have all of these internal variables, and like we were just talking about before, knowing where to be, knowing when we needed to crash to break, what needed to happen. They're adjusting things during our match because the time is happening, and to being like, I got it. What do you need? You know, and they throw another wrench, and we're like, no problem. What else do you need?
Right.
You know, and being able to hold the crowd, hold the rating, and adjust on the fly, just personally from going, I got this. I have it figured out, you know, and you're always learning, but this feels good.
Okay, you and Trish in the ring, two Hall of Famers. Who's calling the match? Who's directing the match?
Right. So we talk on the front end, but we were both really good about trusting each other. You know, if I was, you know, depending on who the heel was, we'd let the heel dictate. and we have pretty good telepathy out there. Mm-hmm. So it would be, I mean, and we're talking almost like sentences out there. Yeah. I'd say keep going, and she'd be like, "Yeah, I know." Like, you know what I mean? Because she was already thinking what I was like. Hey, we were gonna just hit this real quick, but they just bit.
Right.
So let's stay on it.
Right.
And you know, or she'd just do it, and then afterwards we talk. I'd be like, "Yeah, I knew we were just gonna hit that, but it was." But she'd go, "Yeah, nope, I heard it too. That's what needed to happen right there."
What gave you guys this good chemistry? Was it from just Jump Street? Or just something that y'all developed because y'all were good friends?
I think because we started our career within 2 months of each other at the WWE, so it left a lot of the ego out, which I feel like is what is a motivating factor that prevents people from having good chemistry. Right. Because, you know, we're on this road together, and you can't be like, well, back in my day, because we were like, it's the same day. Whereas here, we start the same time. Yeah. So, you know, there's nothing to really front on, and we both want to make an impact. And even if there is jealousy or ego, it's for the benefit, we both had steam on our characters at all times, so it's beneficial for both of us, which is also hard to have that. Sometimes it might be beneficial for you, but not so much for the other person, and there's just going to be that a little bit of, I don't want to help this person, so, you know, or whatever the elements might be involved. But yeah, we started at the same time, and because we both always had steam on our character, it was always going to be a benefit for us to work together, whether it was same team, heel, whatever.
The Divas division has everything's changed. Everything moves a little bit faster than it used to, seemingly. The crop of superstars is a little bit greener these days than it was back in the day, and they have some very bright they have some heavy-duty cats, I think, on the rise. They're going to be big superstars, and it's taken a while for WWE to cultivate that. But going to the Divas specifically, there's a lot more Divas now than there used to be.
Yeah.
And do they get enough TV time? Is there too many of them for them to get enough TV time?
Right. I mean, it seems like you don't see a lot of them until it's a big free-for-all.
Right.
And then because it's a free-for-all, you're like, I don't even know what's going on right now.
And free-for-alls are cluster mucks.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. Mm-hmm. You know, they can really turn out to not be so great and tough to work. And it is what it is.
Sure. I mean, when I was in the locker room, was fortunate that the characters were kind of being developed one by one, and it might mean you hung back for a minute,
right?
But then you had a better developed character to go work against or work with,
right?
I think we've kind of gotten away from that, in both male and female.
I remember there was a time way back in the day, it was sometime in the late 90s, and well, it was probably 99, 2000, give or take, because I was about to go get a neck surgery. You had just come into the company. Mm-hmm. When did you come in?
I was hired in 99.
Okay, mm-hmm. But it's about then, or maybe it was when I came back, but you were meeting with a little frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the office were kind of giving y'all a push, and they kind of stopped y'all. And we were talking mm-hmm. a little bit back in the day. So what was your relationship with the office? You know, some people go in there and they start talking events. I love God death.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, man, I've been a knockdown drag out with that guy.
Sure.
You know, he's a Jedi mind trick.
Mm-hmm.
I seen guys walk in there and they're all pissed off, and you know, they got to get things straight. They're working too hard. They're pushing it strong enough, and they're not making enough money. And all of a sudden they walk out and everything's hunky dory and it's fine. And they realize that they didn't get anything accomplished. How was your dealings with the higher ups, and who was your go-to person as far as, you know, you having your communication with the office and the powers that be, and your direction, and being able to convey how you wanted your character to be presented and your storylines?
Man, that's a really tough question.
Well, I asked you about 50 things in 5 seconds there, but
well, the reason it's tough is because, I'll be honest, you're probably one of the main people whose opinion I trusted and that I felt comfortable going to. And I never felt like I had someone in my corner in the office, honestly.
Right.
And that was, it was annoying. You know, it was annoying because I loved the business so much. I wanted to, like, they had trouble right before I was there with other, you know, with Divas going off and to do another, them building them up and then going off.
Right.
So I kind of got a little bit of the brunt of that. Like you're not jealous, but you get the brunt of the past.
Yeah, don't build up too much. You're going to leave us.
I'm like, do you know what I did to get here? Like, I want nothing more than to just be here. Like they're being so defensive, like thinking I was going to, I don't know. I it was a bummer. I felt like, dude, I love it here. I'm trying really hard. But everyone's on the defensive, and I never felt like I really had somebody rooting for me. I felt like I got over despite them wanting me to. They're
right.
Like, well, she's already here, and they're chanting her name. I guess we got to do something with her.
And to your point, I mean, that almost seems like that's the way it happened. I mean, I just thought y'all were such a cool act all together. And it's like, it's one of those things that you couldn't deny. It was like, okay, we got to do something. They're getting over without, you know, a heavy duty green light, mm-hmm. without any kind of light, really.
Right.
It was just a great package and great performances and an interesting look that no one was doing at the time.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it was like, you've got this. We would just go with it. I mean, and that was something Trish and I have talked about this. We were hired at the same time, but she was their money. You know, yeah. She's this Canadian fitness model, and she has this killer look, and they're going to, like, do these packages, and they send her down to the Bahamas to take these shots, and they're like, dark match. Maybe jacked if you're lucky, you know?
Yeah.
But then, you know, and it took... So it's like my thing kind of took off inadvertently, whereas hers was cultivated.
Right.
And it kind of just typifies our whole yin and yang thing.
And mine kind of the same way, like, too, to your, mm-hmm. maybe along the same way as you. I want to talk to you about your neck injury. You were filming Dark Angel.
Yeah.
And so you were doing a deal with a stunt woman and crash landing. What? And your neck,
mm-hmm.
three broke vertebrae are cracked.
Yeah.
What was the story on that? And it was your first TV gig?
Yeah, that was. My first TV gig, my last TV gig.
First and last.
And that was when you had talked about going out there and doing all these moves and just feeling like I can be wide open in the ring. I had kid power. I was invincible until then. I mean, right. And it really took my invincibility out of me. And that is what, you know, screw the pain, screw the touch time on the shelf, but taking my invincibility away was like the biggest bummer. That and the fact that I like took for a long time, like I wanted the girl that dropped me, I wanted her neck to be broken, like, and I didn't like carrying that around. Like, I'm like, if I see her, like, I want to attack her, and right. I don't like feeling like that.
Right.
Like,
do you still harbor those feelings?
I don't now, just because I'm like, whatever. It's right. Like, it's not just even something that I think about, but it took a long time for me to even shake. Like, I was like, I hate her. And right. I don't even like that I hate her, and I wish I didn't.
Right.
And I felt like a jerk, but you know who I talked to about it? I talked to Draws, and I was right. like, how can you forgive? I'm walking, and I'm going to get better. I feel like a jerk for even bringing this up to you. And he's like, no, let's talk about it. You know, he's fine. We were friends. But and after talking to him about it, and he, you know, I was like, all right, if he can do this, I can too. Not today. I'm not just going to go, okay, today you said so, and I'm going to do it too. But I was like, I'm talking to Draws, who's never going to walk again. I'm going to walk again, and I'm going to wrestle again. I need to just chill right. out and figure out how to reflect and grow from this and not focus my energy on
negative and be hateful.
But I need to give myself to be negative for a minute, you know? Yeah. Like, let me get it out.
Yeah, you got to do that. So you're doing the thing. The deal happens. You get smoked. I mean, so what? Bring an ambulance on the scene. They put you in a collar. Oh, hell, her neck's broke, and then you're right to surgery, because you made a couple rounds, didn't you?
Yeah, we were only like a week into shooting, and I was there, you know, here at WWE, you know, protocol. I'm like, here's the trainer, this mm-hmm. is the doctor, this is how we do things there, and so I'm laying there after the move went wrong, and they said, oh, let's just go ahead, and we'll just take a break. And I'm laid out on the wrestling mat. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, because I can't. I'm on a break right now. I can't move.
Yeah.
And they said, well, they said, just give you a few minutes. I said, he said, if we need to, we'll just walk through the rest of it. We don't need to be physical with it. And I'm laying there. They said, are you okay? I said, well, I can move my fingers and toes, but I can't get up. They said, oh, you just got a stinger. You'll be fine.
And there's a movie set telling you just got a stinger?
And I'm thinking, I hope I just got a stinger. I didn't, but I hope I did, you know? And so after about 5 minutes of just laying there, and I'm just laying there, it's this weird, helpless feeling, because I don't know who any of these people are, who to ask for, what to do. And, you know, from being there, it's normally them being the officer or mm-hmm. medical going, you know, you took a really bad fall. We need to look at that. And you're like, no, I'm fine. Yeah. Don't worry, I'm going to ice it. And they're like, no, well, just to be safe, let's look at it. Well, I'm going, I think we should, I think I'm hurt. And they're like, no, you're fine.
Yeah, no, you're fine. No, I need to be looked at.
Right. And then, I mean, we're just so used to being tough. And so the last thing, I was like, wait, I mean, I think I'm pretty tough, but I think I'm hurt.
You are.
So... Yeah. But they don't think I'm hurt, so right. I guess I'm not.
Right.
Well, and so after 5 minutes, they said, all right, can you get up? And I was like, well, I think if you push me to a seated position, I could stand up from there. Are we supposed to move me, though?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm just like, isn't there like something with head injuries and neck injuries that you're supposed to just leave there? And they're like, okay. So they literally came under, put two hands under my shoulders and just pushed me up to a seated position. My left arm didn't work. I thought maybe I landed on my shoulder or something. Mm-hmm. So I just took my right arm and held my left arm and just like got myself up to a stand and just kind of stood there. My traps and shoulders are jacked up to my ears trying to support my neck that's broken. My other arm is like, you know, up holding and just kind of stayed like that. And then they just kind of were like, and just walked through the rest of the thing. And I'm like, okay. And I mean, and I was hoping, I'm like, I'm going to go home and take a bath. And this is apparently going to go away because nobody else seems to, everybody else here seems to think it's going to go away, you know? And I couldn't take my clothes off. I couldn't move. I couldn't.
So what did you do? You call and go to the doctor? What did you do?
I said, okay. So I think hopefully after I take a shower, everything will be fine. If it's not, is there someone I should call? And they're like, I don't know. I mean, maybe just ask at your hotel if they have a doctor, because they didn't want it on there.
This is in Los Angeles, right?
It's in Vancouver.
Vancouver, okay. Mm-hmm.
And they just like they didn't want it associated with their. I guess if you call the hotel, they can refer you to a doctor. And I was like, all right. Call the next day to the hotel. Who is like somebody like if you have allergies or something when you're on vacation, it's not like you know. And so he comes to my room. He's like, okay, move your head up, move it down, move it left, move it right. You know, which is, of course, I'm like, okay, I can't. And he's like, all right, well, here's some prescription. And I mean, I guess you can't do the show. And I'm like, I mean, all right. Like, who's making these calls? Like, I just don't know. Like, it was just so uncomfortably out of my element. And I remember having this with other major injuries that by the time I finally found out my neck was broken, I was kind of like, see?
Yeah.
Told you, like, part of me was like that, but then part of me was like, now I gotta have surgery, and now I'm like screwed up. But like, I didn't want to have like caused all that like commotion and then be like, it's fine, like, would you just fine, here's your stupid x-ray, see, told you everything's fine, go on, shut up. But so same thing when my knee, I tore everything in my knee and I couldn't finish the match. It was the only time I've never been able to finish the match,
right?
And I was thinking, even out there as we're switching the finish and I'm trying to get through just to like. And I'm like, there better be something wrong with my knee because I don't want to cause a stink and then be like, just a little sprain. And you're like, shit.
There's no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partner, BetOnline.ag. NASCAR is back, and BetOnline has hundreds of games, events, and sports to still get in on. You can bet on simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC, or even participate in a $10,000 Madden Bracket Challenge, a March Madness-style NFL simulation tournament you can enter for free. Visit the website or use your mobile device and join today to receive your new welcome bonus and check out all the action. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet. Okay, but let's stick to the neck. So you get your neck fixed. What did they do to your neck? Did they fuse three levels, two levels? What did they do?
5 to 7, so just two levels.
Okay. Took two a bone levels. Out of your hip or what?
Yeah, I think I was like in the last wave of the bone out of the hip.
Mm-hmm.
So I have nothing else to compare it to, which, of course, that was the bitch to heal, the bone out of your hip walking
around.
Doesn't
really bother me at all. Yeah.
Not now. No. Do you feel it? Do you have like a divot still?
No.
I got a chunk.
I built mine up with a beer.
Oh, but that's what I'm missing. I've got a big divot out of my hip still.
Yeah, because you had your neck done by Youngblood. And when Youngblood, when I woke up, he goes, I took a big, thick bone out of your hip or your iliac crest. He goes, so you used to be 6'1", maybe you'll be 6'2" now. It's kind of ribbing me. It'll help me on my basketball game. So you were down for, what, 15, 17 months?
Yeah, 15 months.
So then you come back, and you're ready to get back in action?
Yeah, and they had said a year initially. And I remember coming up on a year, and I was like, I want to be ahead of the curve, but I'm not. I don't feel ready yet. And again, you know, like, and you know that you want to push yourself, and I felt a little, like, lame for not being. I'm like, they say a year, I want at 11 months I want to be back there, but I'm like, I'm not ready.
You know? Just can't make bone grow back to bone. ASAP.
I mean, and then you've got so much muscle to build back up, because I remember your limitations are such, so like, don't lift more than a jug of milk, don't do any, you know, so you're just like withering away.
How was that for you? I really went into a lot of depression when I went to my next stuff and just ride around. I slowly ride around my property on my four-wheeler and just cruise around. I had a cooler full of beer on the back. And it was just, it was bad for me.
Yeah.
So how far down did you go? And then what brought you out of that?
Wow, man. Yeah, that was tough. I mean, because you're alone, you know? I mean, like, this world, all your friends and all your people that you deal with are in that
chaos. They're out on the road doing their thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and you can't do anything. They're like, you know, only lift a jug of milk. You can't drive. I had to be in that hard collar for 4 months because of the broken bones.
Who did you have to help you?
No one. I mean, you know,
doing
I mean,
your thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I could take care of myself, but I just couldn't do anything.
Well, I know,
fun,
but to me, I mean, like, man, I just turned to Jello. I mean, I'd eat a lot of Mexican food, but I couldn't lift weights, and just all the muscle that I spent my whole life trying to build up left.
Yeah, I really depressed. I'd eat like a box of Little Debbie's. That was
box
my
of
thing.
Little Debbie's. Mine was Mexican food. Mm. And you know what I used to do? I would get in my pickup truck and I'd drive down the road about 40 miles, and there was a in Fredericksburg, there was a Sonic, and I'd get a jalapeno burger, and I'd eat the jalapeno burger. But you know, did they go in through the front of your neck?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when they were going through the front, I got this big ass neck, and they pull all the stuff to the side, so I couldn't swallow very good.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple times after I go through get my Sonic burger, I was going to be like, uh-oh, I've got, you know, a big chunk of cheeseburger lodged in my throat.
Yeah, and it feels
this
like
this is how I'm going to die.
Oh,
choking on a Sonic double cheese jalapeno burger. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Did you ever have that happen to you?
I've never choked on a Sonic burger, no.
Okay. Well, what did you choke on? Yeah, I can't be the only person.
No, it did. It was messed up there. It's like the back of your neck was the problem, but now the front of your neck's your problem. Until it kind of like fused back, like got used to being back where it needed to get back. I just remember I felt so like wimpy and weak, and I hated as much as I hated being in that hard collar, I hated taking it off to shower because then now I'm all
you got old scrawny neck.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable. So I mean, I just felt useless to everyone. I was sitting at home by myself, but yeah, I didn't want to go out. You know, I didn't want to go do appearances because I felt real gross and yuck, and I didn't want to.
Were you still watching the business? Hard to watch.
I think I didn't, you know, I'd probably have it on and then do laundry. So I had something to kind of, you know, like, it's like, I felt like I had to, and I should watch it, and I wanted to, but it was tough.
So then when you get the yellow light from Youngblood and then the green light, so then all of a sudden you're kicking the training back in and you're ready to get back in the ring. And, any doubts, skeptical of what the body can do, worried about your neck?
Well, I got into a decent headspace at first. What I ended up doing was started volunteering at an animal shelter. And I gave myself hours, like as an employee, so that I had somewhere to go and somewhere to be, so that I wouldn't stay up till 6 in the morning watching TV and then sleep all day and then go eat Little Debbie's. So I did that, and that helped me because I was like, I can't help myself and I can't do anything. I can help these, you know, it just made me feel like I was doing something. And then once I started able to work out more, it was really great, and I was like building this whole new body. And you know, I'd have my whole day based around working out. I'd wake up and I'd do my cardio, and then I'd eat, and then I'd go do Bikram yoga, and then I'd come back, then I'd weight train at night, and I loved it, you know. And it was so great to start feeling human. And when I came back, it was great. Like they do the annual Divas magazine, and it was in Mexico, so I did one TV, kicked out, like cleared house, and came back, shot a photo shoot in Mexico, which is, you know, where I started. So and then I'm like, you're like phase two, like let's do this. I felt really great, and I was glad that I took the 15 months instead of 12, because at 12 I felt like I would have been trying to tell myself that I was ready, but I was ready at 15. And people say, oh, you didn't do the moonsault, you didn't do those things after your neck. And it's like, no, I did, and it had nothing to do with how I felt. It had to do with, you guys all know my story. I know I just came back from a neck thing, so let me make it mean something, because I have that luxury to be able to make it mean something.
Right. Tell me about your band. Are you still doing the band thing? Because you
how'd you get that on the plane?
The Luchagors. No, man, I tell you what, I just got in here and I put this in my suitcase. I'm here, sitting here talking to Amy, and I always carry a pocket knife. I tell everybody on my podcast, Amy, that they should have a pocket knife. But I always work.
I have a Kershaw clipper on my keychain, but I took it off so I could flash.
Well, see, I got here and I was like, I have these little coffee gimmicks I'm drinking that I showed you, little Starbucks straws, because they don't have a coffee maker in this gigantic badass hotel that they put you and I in. Separate rooms, but these rooms are gigantic, right?
Right, yeah.
But they don't have a coffee maker. So we're sitting here talking about pocket knives. So anyway, normally I carry a badass pocket knife on my pocket clip, but you can't carry a knife in an airport. So I put this in my bag, And I'm looking around, and I'm trying to... I can't open the damn Starbucks straws in my hands. I said, I got to have a damn knife. And I remember I put this in my little Ziploc bag. Remember back in the day, Kevin Nash just walked in the room. I'm talking to Amy Dumas. She's going to the Hall of Fame this year. Hell of a class this year. And so, you know, I put this in my little Ziploc bag. You know, back in the day, everybody wants to have a badass shave kit. And
yeah.
That's the thing. You kind of get it. It's a present that you can get people. These days, it's a Ziploc bag. I always want to look in there and see what the hell I got going on. So, yeah, that's how I have this knife, Amy. And I'm so proud of myself because every... And look here, Kevin. Kevin will appreciate this because, see that corkscrew?
Yeah, I was impressed with it. Because I was hurt a little. I had to take my knife off my keychain to go to the airport.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, wait, how do you have that?
And I was doing the Adam Carolla show a while back, and they said that they're going to start allowing, you know, I think knives up to two and a half inch blades back mm-hmm. on airplanes. And man, as much as of a knife guy as I am, the people are so damn crazy out there these days that I don't think you should allow the blades back on the plane. I carry one of those, have you ever seen those, it's a pen, what do they call it? A tactical pen.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it as a weapon. It writes.
I have the TSA knife, and it's like a plunger. And then it's plastic, but
right.
It's like you can get it through TSA.
Yeah.
I brought that with me.
Yeah, man. I'm never unarmed. I'm always packing something. But tell me about the luchadors real quick.
So that was one of my things that I didn't want to say, what if.
Right.
I was playing in bands before I...
Because you played bass.
Yeah.
When did you start playing bass?
Before I wrestled. So
in
before
high school?
In college or yeah. area. You know, so when I played in some project bands with some people, but never toured and like did
right.
the full band thing. So when I retired, that was just one of my things on my list that I wanted to. I didn't want to say what if. So we did 3 U.S. tours, 3 European tours, and on that last one, I lost some money, and I was like, "All right, I saw what happened. I did it. I've got
yeah.
that chapter. Check."
So, but what kind of music did you grow up listening to? Were y'all punk influenced or what?
Yeah, I just grew up on like '80s, like. Hardcore punk rock. It's like skate music. You
yeah,
know,
yeah,
I skateboarded
yeah.
and
yeah.
I've transitioned that now into surfing. And
my wife is heavy duty into the punk scene, and I can only name a couple of bands. What was it that drew you to the punk scene?
God, you know, we
was it the rebellious
yeah.
nature or was it the music itself?
It was both to me, and the music embodied the rebellious nature.
Right.
It was, you know, if you didn't get it, you didn't get it, and I didn't want you to get it.
Right.
You know, and so if you're in, then you're in, and you're one of us, and if
right.
you're not, then like stay out there and we're just going to kick and scream about some stuff and you know.
Nonconformity?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you played bass, but you sang as well?
Yeah. And in my band, I would play bass and I would play guitar to write.
Yeah, yeah.
But on stage, I didn't want the cumbersomeness of having an instrument in front of me because I would jump all over the place and
right.
jump on people. And so I just sang whenever we'd play live.
So you're not doing that anymore?
No, I had that chapter. I know.
you're so interesting. You're clipping along in pro wrestling, and okay, it's time to end this. And the luchadors, okay, lost a little money. It's time to clip this. Tell me, you got to tell me about this place in Nicaragua we got, because basically you spend most of your time in Atlanta,
mm-hmm. yep.
And you're heavily involved with animal rescue stuff because you started a door.
Yeah,
Amy Dumas,
Operation Rescue and Education.
Yes.
Yeah, I did that from, you know, branching off with my neck and getting involved in the animals and stuff then. It kind
right.
of really being therapeutic for me when I couldn't take care of myself to be able to take care of something else. But so I did that. And then with finding this whole Nicaragua chapter was it's almost like the whole full circle thing. A lot of things, I feel like, come full circle. And I had always an attachment to the Latin American community from starting in Mexico and then just kind of going down there and having my... It's like a whole other world.
Yeah, but had you ever wrestled down there? Because I know you were down in Mexico, mm-hmm. but okay, when you went to Mexico, that was Mexico City.
Sure.
So then how the hell you say, Nicaragua, I got to mm-hmm. have a place in Nicaragua. How's that
yeah.
happen?
Well, they make it really hard for you to own land in Mexico as a foreigner.
Right.
So I wanted to, you know, I'm always trying to learn something new, and I'm okay at Spanish, but I wanted that to be something that I delved into deeper. And I just thought, well, maybe if I, you know, like the average person does, I thought maybe if I own a house down there that would be one way to go straight to the source
yeah.
again and keep up with my Spanish. And so now Spanish and surfing, I'll spend time and kind of learning and figuring out those things. It's just fun to learn something new always and feel like you're growing. And
so then what is a typical day like you? What is a typical day like for you once you go down to Nicaragua and say, we were talking earlier, you said
mm-hmm.
you might go down there for a 5-month stretch.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what's life down there? How does your day work?
God, it's so great.
Oh, hell, you're going to say nothing. Wake up and serve and hang out with Mackenzie the killer dog.
Yeah.
What? Tell me about getting her back and forth.
It's so easy. That was one of the things I looked at before I bought a place. All I have to do is have a rabies vaccination. She's good. She can come and go. She loves it. She chases waves. I wake up, go for a run on the beach. That's our morning.
Right.
Come back, make some breakfast. We check the tides. We'll surf at tides, at high tide. So.
Right.
Surf once a day. If not, they've got kettlebells in the gym down there. They've got a gym down. I'll do that. My friends own a sailboat tour, so I'll go out with them on the sailboat. And then the flip side to that is it's a really nice town. There's fancy massage and nice restaurants, but five miles away, or you can go and be involved in getting running water to a village, or there'll be an English program at the school that was just built, and so you can be involved in as real stuff, or as kind of check out and fluffy and simple and have a nice day stuff, or as real as you want to be, and I just love being a parts of both sides of that.
So they just accept you. How long have you been down here now?
Since 2009.
Oh, so you're a regular now, but I mean, is there like a whole lot of white people down there?
There's an expat community.
You stick out like a sore thumb?
There's an expat community down there, but the fun thing is they get wrestling down there. But so they'll just be like, oh yeah, Lita. They know it's me, but they're just like, whatever. That's the it's not like a big deal.
Yeah.
And so that's nice. It's cool. I mean, it's like Lita's like a nickname. Like everyone has a nickname down there, as opposed to. If I hear that on the street, I'm just like,
Well, they'll say Steve Williams. Hey, Mr. Williams. No, man, I really did legally change my name to Austin. That's who I am. So what do you prefer, Atlanta or Nicaragua? Don't say either one.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, you got to have one favorite.
No. I prefer Nicaragua. I see myself being down there long-term as things go by.
Do you think you'll segue out of Atlanta and go full-time Nicaragua?
I could see basing more, because it's still really easy to get from Nicaragua to anywhere that I want to get.
Right.
I can get to Nicaragua quicker than I can get to L.A. So I could see basing down in Nicaragua, but I just love traveling.
Right.
I've been doing some appearances, and I've been doing this new thing where I'm doing an appearance in July in London, but then I booked a trip to Portugal off of my London trip, because I just, there's a surf break out there that I was like, oh, look, there's this break right here. I'm going to go do that for a week based off of this London trip.
So then you think, it'll be the time to ever close the chapter on Nicaragua and go somewhere else.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's such a small little town, but it's if it grows, I say, well, give me that problem, because right now I'll rent it when I'm not there, and it stays rented. So but I'm like, well, if it becomes a place that's kind of advanced, then I'll move on to the next Nicaragua or whatever happens. I don't plan.
Now, you're on Twitter at Amy Dumas.
Yes.
At Amy Dumas on Twitter, and your website is theamydumas.com. So I noticed on your website you've got a bunch of appearances coming. So how hot and heavy are you out there making the rounds?
This year I thought I'd, do the Hall of Fame, do appearances for a year, and then after that, I'll be 39 in a couple weeks.
You're still a youngster. You got a couple years left in the tank if you want
it. A couple years? Yeah. Well, I thought, if
I get that call from Stephanie.
Well, some ambiguous call. And then after a year, I'd just like to maybe be a little more scarce. And I do enjoy the cameos here, coming back and having fun. But, I don't need to be – I've run this chapter pretty good, And so do some appearances, but kind of tag vacation, or exploration kind of things onto there. And just kind of switch gears after that. So, I want to do some appearances this year, and then I want to phase that out.
Now, you wrote one book or two books?
I wrote one book, but then I just did some articles for a new vegan strength training book.
Right. So is that going to come out?
That's out, yeah.
Okay, so but any now that you're on to the next chapter of your life, any aspirations or desires to write another book?
God, have you done that? It's pretty labor intensive.
Well, I'm trying to write one right now, and it ain't going worth a damn. And I wrote the first one, but basically that was Jim Ross and Dennis Brent. Mm-hmm. I was talking to them, and I recorded some stuff. So I'm like ADD. I'm crazy, and so it's not a good process for me. But the fact that you did one, I just was interested.
Well, so what do you think? So I was thinking, because that's what I initially thought when I was kind of reading. I was like, I should write another book. I've had so many.
Sounds like a great idea.
It does. Sounds like it. But then as I started, because that came out in 2003 or something.
Yeah,
I was like, so many things have happened since then. But then as I started thinking about how daunting, I was like, I don't know, it's pretty labor intensive.
Yeah.
I was thinking of maybe, but I did really enjoy writing my speech and I do enjoy stuff. So I was thinking more like public speaking. I think you would be awesome at that. Like where you can kind of skew it towards different audiences. And then you don't have to write it down.
But you know what? You said the key thing when you were writing your speech. Now, here's the thing about writing a book. Now, if you can just start writing a book, but you don't have a hard deadline, mm-hmm. and you can take up to a year to write that thing, if there's not a real timeline, then I could dig it. You know, trying to work on a timeline, I'm under the gun. It's crunch time. And I'm like, man, I got so much stuff going on. It's hard for me to focus. I don't multitask very well at all.
I don't multitask.
Man, if it wasn't my damn wife, I don't know what, you know, I drove into a cliff. Mm-hmm. So if I didn't have a timeline, I think it would more facilitate that process.
But I mean, the public speak, like, because I've even just started recently doing stuff like, but through like health and vegan fitness and stuff. But just the speaking, because you can have an outline, and I'm like, I know what I know,
right?
So I can just talk.
Right. It's, well, like, yeah, I could do a Q&A because yeah. I mean, I always got a bunch of answers if people got questions. But let me ask you before we wrap this whole shenanigan up about the vegan lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Are you a vegetarian?
Yeah, I'm vegan. Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, now my wife is a vegetarian. She's the only first vegetarian I ever met, and I can't believe we've been together for 10 years because it was so foreign for me to sure. hang out with a chick that didn't eat no meat. So what is the difference between vegan and vegetarian? Same thing?
Well,
my wife don't eat nothing with eyes. She'll eat eggs. Okay. I mean, egg whites, but uh-huh. that's it.
Sure. And so, yeah, so some vegetarians, they drink milk. Some eat eggs. So I do nothing that comes from an animal whatsoever. So
gotcha.
No milk, no eggs, cream, dairy,
right.
stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Man, you able to get all your proteins in? I mean, you look like a million bucks. I mean, it's a stupid question, but I mean, obviously you're not malnourished.
No, not at all. And I feel really great, and I'm lifting heavier than I was.
But were you always vegan?
No,
when did you turn?
I was vegetarian before I wrestled. And then because I didn't know how to get my protein, and when I was trying to build muscle to become a wrestler, I reluctantly stopped. And it was real hard for me because I had been vegetarian already for 10 years. So all the time when I was wrestling, I was not vegetarian. And then once I retired.
You went to the dark side.
I did.
Luke, I am your father. So then why did you stop again? Just
because
you didn't
I just didn't want to.
Okay,
before.
Did you notice anything? Did you get more energy? Did you lose weight? What happened?
I've noticed if I'm just vegetarian, I don't really notice anything because it's, you know, there's eggs, there's milk, there's things from but once, now that I've been vegan for a while, I feel a lot better. And I'll even say, like, I've done extensive juice fasting. But, somebody can be just as unhealthy at being a vegan as they can
right.
But it's like, but vegan and, like, no processed foods, none of this. Like, I'll notice a huge difference in how my back feels. I just came off of a long juice fast. I could put my hands on the ground, you know, like, bend over, put my hands on the ground. I never can because my back locks up. And so I do notice, like, legit things, not just me trying to say, no, I feel great, and I have more energy.
I'm such a damn idiot. I bought one of those badass juicers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Nash just joined us at the table. And DDP, my illustrious buddy, Diamond Dallas Page, I could punch him right in the mouth. I love him to death. Bro, you got to start juicing. Blah, blah, blah. Then I saw that special about that guy who lost.
Fat, sick, and nearly dead?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I watched that. So I got to get a juicer, man. Mm-hmm. It's the answer. I can drop all these LBs around my waistline.
Mm-hmm.
So I started juicing beer. I'm kidding. So I started making all these badass things with kale and cucumbers and apples and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But I was drinking so much of that, I got a drum from juicing too much. I mean, it's stupid.
But you do that and you'd eat, right?
Yeah.
Right. So because then you're getting the sugar from the juice whatever, the Sonic jalapeno burgers.
If I was limber enough, I'd kick myself in the ass. Hey, so in a couple of days, and you're going into the Hall of Fame, you had to go talk to the people about your Hall of Fame acceptance speech or your speech you're going to make. Mm-hmm. How did that process go? Were they cool with everything you had to say?
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, it was funny because I had the same feeling when we recorded our album with the band.
Yeah.
You know, your songs are personal. You wrote them. You're like, get off my songs.
Right.
You know, we had a producer come in.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, he can come in, but they're perfect, and they're just how I want them to be, and, you know, whatever. But then they made them better. Like, because it's an outside person going,
right.
Well, this is good. But what if, and it's just like the smallest little thing, and I felt like that was really nice with the writer, because he's like, this is great. What if, you know, you just threw a little this or that in, or did anything else happen that can kind of tie that up?
Yeah.
And it was nice. It was just, it's like just somebody helping me. But I was, again, like we talked about at the beginning, I was like prepared to be like, nope, don't change it. You know, I'm saying all this and more. There's nothing you can do about it. It's my time. And then they were like, no, this is great. Like, what about just a couple adjustments?
Now, was all of the other Hall of Fame inductees in there, or was just the period of time where Amy Dumas goes in?
It was just me.
Right. So it's all about you. Hey, can you do me a favor? During your Hall of Fame acceptance speech, just drop my website, brokenskullranch.com. That's it. I'm kidding you. Hey, I've been talking to Amy Dumas. Y'all know her, Lita, all around the world. She kicked ass, raised hell, had a hellacious career. She's going into the Hall of Fame. I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time. We've known each other for a long time.
Yeah, I know.
And we've talked here and there. And back in the days when y'all had some issues trying to get a little bit of a push. But this is the first time we ever got time to really just sit down and shoot the breeze together.
Yeah, since I've probably been back over staying at your house when I'd come in for neck checkups and stuff.
Yeah, so next time, maybe I'll talk to you when I'm down in Nicaragua surfing. Yeah, that's me, surfing and running and doing the vegan lifestyle, dropping LBs. Amy, thanks for doing the show.
Yeah, all right.
I'll catch you down the road. All right, to give me the go-home cue, don't forget to rate and review the Steve Austin Show on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends to check us out. If you want to reach me here on the podcast, send an email to questions@steveaustinshow.com. The best damn IPA on the planet is Broken Skull IPA at El Segundo Brewing Company. You can also get Broken Skull IPA at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. If you're not in California, check out ElSegundoBrewing.com because we might be heading your way. We are in 17 states. Go to the ElSegundoBrewing.com website, click on BS IPA, and look at the interactive map to find the location nearest you. Thank you for all your support, and this badass IPA, in my opinion, is the best IPA in America, and that's the bottom line, because I said so. I'd like to say one more thank you for all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially BetOnline, Geico, Scott's. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you free twice a week. Please support them because they support us. If you need more info, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, if you see me riding something in the woods, you can bet your ass it'll be a Kawasaki. Until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I'll catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Hey, 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 this is NFL Hall of Famer Ray Lewis. I'm excited to announce the launch of my new podcast, Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast. I'll be talking with friends, family members, old teammates, athletes, celebrities, moguls, and guess what? I'll be talking to you. Listen, this is all in the search for everyday greatness. So I'm asking you to come along with me on this ride. Download new episodes of Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on PodcastOne.com. It's not what you have, it's what's inside of you that actually inspires greatness.